hit record. And just to establish some context, we are here at Merlefest. It's April 28th, 2022. And if you would please each state your name and the band that you perform with.
Alex Federica, I perform with Scythian.
And my name is Dan Federica, and I perform with Alex.
Great, thank you.
Yeah.
So we have a list of questions here, and we'll just kind of go down the list. I may ask a follow-up question as we go, so we appreciate, again, your time today. So we'll start with the first one. What is your favorite memory of Merlefest or the Watson family?
Ooh, that's a tough question. There's just so many awesome memories here.
I've just been here, this is our 15th time or 15 times already in a row. So I was flooded with memories as I was driving into the grounds today of just the friends that you make over the years and the music you've seen and the influences that have become part of our, now part of our musical story. But I have to think that we always have to drive by that entrance gate to the festival, and we like to think of it, that's the way we kind of got in through the kitchen window as a band.
Yeah.
You know,
it's called the Welcome Stage, and that was the first year. John Adair was the booker at the time, and I talked to him for a while, and you know, after like maybe two or three conversations, he's like, listen, we're totally booked up. If you want to, you can just play at the opening gate. And as people are walking up, just say, welcome to Merlefest, every 3 minutes or so. We have no hotels. You can camp in my yard at my house. He lives up in the mountains. And we're like, you know what? Let's just try it. And he said, but I'll give you one slot on the open mic stage at 10:30 a.m. on Friday. So we're like, oh, man, that's not a very good slot, but we'll take it. I hope everyone's awake. But remember, it's funny that this year's headliner is Old Crow Medicine Show, and they were headlining the Thursday night that year on the Motson.
That's right.
And so that was the night before our Friday morning open mics stage.
So we would do these welcome sets, I think it was four sets a day for 4 days, and you'd play for maybe 45 minutes and, you know, welcome people, but it was that night we went to go see Old Crow, Dan had a great idea. At the end of it, everyone had to wait for their buses, right? And so he said, hey, they have nowhere to go. Let's grab our instruments. And we just did a bootleg set right in front of those lines to get back onto the buses to get out of. They had nowhere to go, like the most captive audience you could possibly have.
The definition of an ambush.
Oh, it was great. And it was funny because we just, you know, we rolled up there. We pulled up a folding table and plopped it down on the gravel. And just started making noise. We play, you know, we play a mix of Irish, Appalachian, and Eastern European. My brother and I our parents are from Ukraine. And so we just started just doing a rowdy set for all those people that had nowhere to go. And had some stickers and, you know, just stuck people with our stickers. And on that Friday set, we had a bunch of people come out. And we would have thought, you know, that nobody would have been there at 10:30 in the morning, but we didn't understand at that point yet what a Merlefest crowd really is. It's mm-hmm. about the music. It's about taking chances and really being welcoming to bands that are just starting out. I mean, we had our own specific sound. We thought maybe as an Irish focus band, what are we doing at Merlefest? But John said, hey, just come out and play. But the way that the audience, the crowd came and became so responsive, said, no, we encourage you. It's to just really play your music. We want to hear it. And that was the main impression I had when I first came to Merlefest. I couldn't believe the receptivity that the people at Merlefest had.
And I think it came from Doc. Mm-hmm. I mean, Doc really took bands under his wing. Like, you know, Old Crow, no one would book Old Crow in the early days until Doc did. And it was kind of a crazy story. That one morning, I think like 400 or 500 people showed up to our open mic set. It was right there in the plaza. And we were like, how did this happen? But it wasn't until about 7 years later, that was about 3 years after Doc passed on, that Leanne, one of the head of the artist transportation, told me that Doc had heard about our ambush set the night before and he wanted to hear what we were about. So he had Leanne drive him behind the stage where we were playing at 10:30 in the morning, and he went and he caught a couple of our songs, and he was like, oh man, those are lots of fun, and then just drove on. But when I found out, you know, 3 years after he died, that that's what had happened, it was to me like one of the biggest honors. That Doc, that's how seriously Doc took instilling music in the next generation. That he would keep his ear to the ground. What's the what are people buzzing about? And he would actually go take the time to go, you know, hear them play and encourage them. And that to me is a kind of Emerald Fest memory that you will just never forget as a young artist. You know, what Doc came to hear us play? Like, what?
And right, you have somebody who has sort of stratospheric greatness and celebrity, right? And oftentimes you associate it with people that, you know, they come in on their big buses and then they get on stage, off stage, and then you don't see them. But the way that Doc was so available and present and in, like Dan said, interested in people that may not fit the mold. I mean, we kind of consider ourselves misfits to a degree because we weren't coming from a pure bluegrass background, but I guess that's sort of, you know, Doc was the spirit of bluegrass plus, they always say. And that was that really made a deep impression on me, and just sort of, I guess, a good lesson on what the point of music is. It was always about the music for Doc, and it wasn't, you know, some things can cloud, you know, that journey as you get fame and you get money and you get all that, you know. But to Doc, it was just, you could tell it was so pure hearted for him, you know, despite the fact that he was a legend, that the way he could, you know, be receptive and open and encouraging, that made a very deep impression on us as a band just starting out. And I tell you that we carried that with us when we went to other places, a confidence that said, you know, these people believe in us, you know, the Merlefest audience has encouraged us in what we were doing, and we'll keep doing that, not feeling like we have to conform to a specific sound. I think Doc was probably the main reason for that spirit here at Merlefest.
Right. Two follow-up questions for you all about that. As you were talking, a couple of things popped in my mind. How did you first hear about Merlefest, and, you know, why what brought you here in the first place? And I'll ask the second one in just a moment.
At the time, our drummer was from Charlotte, and he'd grown up going to Merlefest, and he's like, guys, there's this festival in North Carolina, we have to get in there. And, you know, the idea of driving from D.C. to the Charlotte area, unpaid, to play for 4 days and sleep on in a tent in someone's yard, didn't seem very appealing at the time, but he was like, no, just trust me, we have to do this. And, I mean, we just literally, we did it just taking his word for it. But we had no idea what we were about to encounter. And like Alex said, it completely changed the trajectory of our musical careers. I think, you know, one thing I want to add to Alex is that the fact that it's Bluegrass Plus, there's, you know, in any genre, there tends to be the purists, and a lot of people would be like, feel threatened by letting people that aren't strict bluegrass into a bluegrass festival. But I think it kind of just illustrated Doc's belief in the attractiveness of the tradition that he came from. And it was his way of keeping this tradition alive, because he just was confident, if we get these plus people in, it's not the bluegrass people aren't going to walk away liking the plus more, it's the plus people are going to walk away finding out that they actually love bluegrass. And that's what happened to us. Yeah. You know, we were kind of on the fringe. All of a sudden, we wanted to get more steeped in this tradition, and it really changed our sound.
Great. Thank you. And when did you first meet Doc? Do you remember that?
It was that. So we did not meet him that first year, even though he came and heard us play. But what's crazy, Beat Towns came out at the very last day because he had heard about us. We did a couple. One time it started pouring, and we found everyone went under a tent. So we stood up on a table in the tent, and then we did another Renegade set. So B came out to meet us, and he said, I just really like your proactive nature. There's a lot of buzz about you boys. And then the next year, we started the festival on the main stage, the very first set. So to go from playing in the welcome stage to kicking off the festival on the Watson.
Yeah, that was an incredible kind of a vote of confidence in the festival, saying,
absolutely,
you know, we ratify and encourage you boys to keep doing what you're doing. And as a young band, to have that honor was just wow.
And you look over there and you see the two rocking chairs on the side stage, you know, and that's where I got to meet Doc. I met him several times. I think the volunteers were so cognizant of what an honor it would be to meet him. I think a lot of people went the extra yard to make sure that we got to meet him. And so I met him and his wife the first year that we played on the Watson stage. And I think there's about two or three other times that we got to chat a little bit backstage. And it was just kind of this amazing thing. Like, it was almost like we fell into a storybook, because you never thought you'd actually get to meet the legends. And it was right around that time, you know, Levon Helm from the band was there that, you know, that same year. I got to meet him, and you're like, wow, like, I never thought I could actually experience living history. Mm-hmm. And that really had a deep impact on me.
Great. Thank you both. So, and I feel like you've touched on this a little bit in some of what you said, but why do you think Merlefest is a homecoming of both fans and musicians?
Yeah, I mean, I would say that, I mean, it does, you really, you go back to just, I mean, Doc is the font of that. He's the spirit of it. But I think that, I think it was just the way that Doc, I think he projected that just, it starts with, you know, when you sat and watched Doc play and you saw his set, it was just such a sense of camaraderie. And he was just, how many times had he played these songs? You know, it was just the way that it was such joy in the music itself. And I think people wanted to be around that. I mean, there's something very special about that there was something erroneous, like this is the way and the reason music should be played. He created that sort of family environment. I think that was his gift. I mean, that was just the genius of Doc. And so I think people, you know, and then these greats that kind of rallied around him for the tragic circumstances that Merlefest started. I mean, these people, but they sensed that already at that point. And I think that it just kind of cascaded outwards from the musicians that wanted to be there, because, again, a little bit like Dan was saying, you see so many musicians, these greats that come to this festival, and there's a sort of a disarming way that they even carry themselves backstage, and their friend, you know, there's these boundaries that Doc had a way of just melting the boundaries that can sometimes be artificially created. And, you know, I understand fame sometimes makes it necessary for strong boundaries, but there's something about Merlefest, having played a bunch of other festivals, that those were relaxed because it was about the music. And it, you know, and the great thing, I feel that since Doc's passing, I do still feel that tradition carries on. And I think a lot of it does have to do with the fact that the fans have come to resonate that. And it flows back to now the new bands that come in that maybe have never had a chance to meet Doc. I think that the fans carry that spirit, and there's a sort of a frequency and a hum that's been now passed on. And now we're talking multiple generations, where it comes back now to the new bands that are from the audiences. So I think it's a really unique thing, and it's a beautiful thing to be sort of on the receiving now end of that same spirit. I feel like that Doc first probably projected from stage.
Great, thank you. Anything to add?
Yeah, definitely. And I think that the sense of ownership that the fans and the volunteers have, they see themselves as hosts, not as fans, kind of creates these unique opportunities, especially for younger kids to interact with artists that they feel very inspired by. Like, I remember the first year we were on the Watson stage, that night Zach Brown was headlining, and he said, I've been coming here since I was 14 years old, and it was always my dream to somehow one day be on this stage, and it happens tonight. And, you know, he was a 14-year-old that got to experience, and, like, and even ourselves, like, this weekend at the little kid stage, there's a band that was, like, such fans of ours, but they're performing. They're siblings. They're called Pick and Thistles. Mm-hmm. But they're performing, and at some point we inspired them because we just relate to them, you know, it's so easy to relate to people at Merlefest as people.
Yeah.
And, like my brother said, is that the kind of, you know, almost like the fame that is created through pop culture, mm-hmm. It disappears. It melts away here, and it's just all about the music, and it's kind of remembering. It's a real roots festival in the way you kind of remember what music was about. It was about bringing people together, mm-hmm. and creating magic moments.
Sure. Great. Thank you. So I think you've already answered the third question. So talking about how you got involved with Merlefest and your first performance or performances. But I would like you to expand, please, on the third part of this question, how it impacted your musical careers. You said it really helped you or propelled you. So can you talk a little bit about that?
Sure. I think that in two ways for me, I feel. A was what we were doing, it encouraged us, it ratified us to not necessarily have to seek a mainstream path in order to feel as though that's what we need to do in order to make ourselves or our career viable, you know. So it was encouraging us because we were coming more from an Irish tradition, but it was, you know, fiddle tunes and very high energy stuff, similar to the Appalachian stuff, but you know, we were also doing a mix of our Eastern European heritage that we grew up with. And it was so much encouragement on that list. Keep doing that. We want to hear what your story is. And so we decided, you know what, we're going to keep expressing sort of our story, which was growing up in the Shenandoah Valley, being introduced to Irish music, but at the same time having a first generation Ukrainian, you know, upbringing where we just had the culture permeating our lives when we were growing up, and that was, ended up being what the story we were saying. But in some ways, on a commercial sense, it could have been perceived as disjointed. But when you come here and they say, keep doing it, and that's 15 years ago, we decided to just keep on that path. And I'm glad that we did. But at the same time, like Dan was saying, we got introduced to a lot of Americana, a lot of these legends that maybe we weren't coming from that tradition per se, and our set had influences of Americana, Cajun, you know, that's become part of our sort of catalog of music that we now write. So it's definitely influenced songwriting, and
even our moniker for what our music is about, like. Mm-hmm. We're like, what genre are you? And that's when we kind of get paralyzed because we're so all over the board because of this various influences. But we just started saying we're old time, good time. And if it gets you moving and it's old time, then we'll play it.
Right.
I think that's definitely was huge for our career, but also just playing at Merlefest opened so many doors. We were just a predominantly Celtic band till that point, but as soon as we started playing Merlefest, all these other festivals started being interested in us. Venues all across the state of North Carolina, and now we can, you know, confidently say that North Carolina is our strongest state. And also just seeing, like, up on the East Coast, a lot of the Irish pubs or Irish festivals was more kind of a heritage thing, but here in North Carolina, to play to a dance tent that is full of, like, 14 to 25 year olds that are losing their minds to your music, it was like, wait, this actually rocks.
Yeah.
It really put wind in our sails to kind of keep on doing what we were doing.
Mm-hmm. It's a living tradition, yeah. Really, here. That's the sense there. So, yeah.
Great.
Yeah, no, you're right. Merlefest, professionally, on that level alone, can open doors. It's got such a great reputation among buyers across the country, and there's such a respect for it. The fact that we've been playing here for 15 years, it's just it carries with it a weight that's in itself on a professional level opened up a lot of doors for us. So
have you ever missed a year since 2007, or have you performed?
I mean, unless it was COVID, that was the only year we missed.
Yeah,
but honestly, I think we've played every year since that first set the welcome stage on gravel. I mean, that the first weekend that we played here. But yeah,
we've literally seen kids grow up.
Yeah.
You know, right in front of us. And
yeah,
we grew up as a band. We were a little baby band when we came here.
Absolutely.
We're all grown up.
Yeah. How about that?
20th anniversary was the year we played. I guess they're about to celebrate their
35th.
Yeah,
it's wild. Yeah.
15 years ago.
How about that? So are there any... I'm skipping ahead. Excuse me. And I think this is a nice lead-in to this question, is what makes performing here special? And I feel like, again, you've touched on this, but why have you returned year after year? Why have you played every year except for the COVID years?
Oof. I mean, it is such a well-run festival. Like, you get taken care of like family here. Just it even right away in the first year, before we were even officially a band, it started becoming family. The way the volunteers, you know, the artist transportation, they take you back and they tell you all the legends, or like, this happened here, or like, you kind of get sucked into the oral tradition of what's happening here at the festival. And then just how like, everyone that is here is a music lover. And a lot of festivals, like, you know, if you're doing a traditional festival, they may be there because they're Irish and they like Irish stuff. Or, you know, there's a dog show of Irish hounds and they're there for that. Or like, but like, in Irish festivals, there's just all different reasons for coming to an Irish festival. But it's very clear as soon as we started playing here, there was one reason why everyone was here. And it's like when you go to that for the first time, it's like experiencing something that, like an energy flow in the music that you've never experienced from coming from the audience. Because for us, the audience is such a huge part of the show that the back and forth is basically how our shows end up with everybody jumping around and dancing. But here it was such a almost like magnified level of appreciation, and also people know their stuff here. So in one sense, it's intimidating, but it's another thing, it's just very exhilarating. If they affirm you, you know you did a good job. And so there's something about that every year. It comes at a good time of the year. It's right when festival season start. So you leave here rejuvenated and also re-inspired. Like, you'll see a band, you're like, wow, I want to play guitar like that guy. Or just write beautiful music. And so that's, at least for me personally, that's what goes through my mind.
Do y'all remember the point where you said, okay, we're blocking this off. Every year we're going to plan to come to this. Was there a point in time when that clicked and you said, we're going to make this an annual thing?
I think it may have been probably, we were blown away the first weekend already. We would love to come back at any chance. And then, like, the official way of saying, and then the second year after that, I think we just said to ourselves, we're just going to clear this weekend, because it was a sense of, I don't know, you just feel like you're with, it's like a family reunion on a band level, because we were not only, you know, making friends with volunteers and, you know, patrons, but also other bands were jumping in. Like, the second year we played, like, we're jumping in on our sets, and we would say, hey, would you want to like to play with us? And like, well, we'll jump in and play with you at this dance tent. Horn players would just say, hey, I play horns, you know, you want me to, yeah. Oh, this is so much fun. Like, this collaborative sense of bands and making friends with people that are your peers. We're all traveling. And it was almost like the sense of going to camp, and you see your friends and you start seeing them. Like, a lot of bands, the same bands do come back. So I thought that, you know, it very quick, very early on, it was just said, you know, we're just, this is it. We're not going anywhere. And we'd always tell Merle Fest, say, listen, we're here. We want to play as many times as possible. So just, we're willing to play 2-3 sets a day. Seven or eight times over a weekend. Like, it's like, we're here to play, and they would take us up on it. And quickly, I mean, we had so much fun running from stage to stage. And I think when you play that much as well, you get more contact points. So we became more friends with more volunteers at a faster pace. Other bands will come back for one day, and they'll come back maybe 2 years later. But we were always just saying, just book us away. And I think we quickly became friends with buyers and volunteers and other bands in a way that we would have been a little slower.
Someone that we ran into today referred to y'all, I think, as the hardest working band at Merle Fest. so how would you respond to that? Do you feel like that's an accurate statement? Is it, based on what I'm hearing, it sounds like you are. You know, you're jumping
in. I guess if you call it work.
Yeah.
It's hard to call it work, though, because it's like, I was just talking to somebody backstage. I had seen this a few times, and it's like, oh, they're working you a lot this weekend. But then he was like, well, if you want to call it work, I'm like, let's be honest, it's not work. We're so lucky to be able to play, and it's, you never think of it that way, but we do end up playing quite a few sets here. We're doing a kid set, we're doing like, two or three sets a day, so.
We'll do four stages, or the first year we did seven different stages.
Wow.
That was work that year, but it was great because within our first year we had seven stages, so after the first year a lot of people have seen us play. But also, there's just a vote of confidence. Like, in our, I think it was our fourth year, they asked us to host the late night jam. Mm-hmm. Like, you're like, wait, we were just playing at the opening gates. This is our fourth time here, and we're hosting the late night jam. So, like, I have to tell Zach Brown what to do. I'm like, okay, this is normal. But that to us was, like, such a vote of confidence. Which, for a young independent band, like, we're not, like, on a big record label on. We've always just been independent because we wanted to do our own music. I mean, it's almost indescribable to tell you what that does for a band like us, to believe in ourselves and I think that after that it's like we just can't miss. We'll do whatever it takes to be back here.
Yeah, great. Thank you both. So are there any particular rituals or traditions that you only do around this time of year, around the festival, either leading up to or right after, that's unique to the Merlefest experience?
Oh, yeah. We definitely, every Merlefest, we get a big, like double bump out bus, and we go backstage so that we can have all of our friends come on the bus. And that's the only festival we ever do that. We had a bus for years, but then when diesel goes up over $5 a gallon,
yeah,
it's just not a good idea.
Right.
But for Merlefest, that's our thing that we do, because it kind of becomes this like place where we can host and can kind of almost like get the one-on-one time with the people that sometimes it's hard when you're just on a cart or whatever. And so our way of saying thank you. So we just stock up on goodies.
And then that's a place for us to be able to be with some of the volunteers that we've made friends with. I mean, now at this point, it's friendships now you're coming back to. And we bring our family members down, our extended family members will come down. Other bands will get up, and then sometimes if we collaborate, we get up on the bus and we have jam sessions, and then we'll. So it's really the only festival that we do that. That's a very, you know, we'll be here. We try to be here for 4 days, and just kind of park and create like a little bit of a mini city for ourselves to be able to have a place where we can just, you know, be friends. You know, meet up with our friends that we don't see, you know, during the course of the year. But yeah, that's. No other festival do we do something like that.
Great, thank you. You graduated to seniors almost now, right?
Yeah,
right?
Definitely.
Yeah. So can you describe your relationship with Doc a little bit more? You talked a little bit about meeting him in those earlier years. And sort of a follow-up to that could be, do you remember the first festival you performed after he died? And what was that like?
I remember where I was the day he died.
Okay.
I was walking across Montana, mm-hmm. and so I just was like singing Shady Grove to myself, and it was remember dusk, and then we lit up a fire, and then I just taught everybody the song, and I told them that Doc had passed, mm-hmm. and we all sang it in his honor, and I still pray, and I pray for him all the time, because just, you know, prayers of gratitude, and you know, if I'm driving, very often you just put on your driving music to keep you awake. And on those days where it's like sunny and you're looking at, you know, fields and it's, you know, like the hills of Virginia, and I'll just put on, you know, Doc, you know, the greatest hits or whatever, and just let it go. And just will think fondly of like of him and everything he's created. And that was to me like, I mean, I never got to know him very well. We came here in the year 20th year, and probably the fourth, fifth year. I mean, at that point he was.
Yeah.
He was already just, you know, he was very present to you when he was there, but he didn't want to get bothered too much. So I can't say that I had any opportunity to play with him. But just a few times that I met him, he was just so present and so kind. And, you know, we were very cognizant that everything that we had received was basically kind of a growth of his spirit.
Yeah, I wouldn't say I had a relationship with him, but there's a way that he carried himself that I was very impressed, found him to be like a very honorable man and who was at the same time a legendary musician. I was like, I like that example to me of somebody who is just, you know, he doesn't use it for, you know, for an occasion to be rude or mean. Like he could, I mean, it could be the case, but the way he carried himself is like, that is something I want to be. I admire that. And no matter what happens, always be gracious at every moment. If, you know, in any kind of circumstance, that to me was like he became very present to me and how I want to carry myself, no matter what level of success we get. I always wanted to be like available and gracious when, you know, in any environment. And you know, everybody wants to talk to Doc, but no, it didn't matter. He didn't get tired of it. He was an old, I mean, he was up in age and everything. Always a gracious man. I was like, man, that's, you know, a man who's that respected as a musician and such a legend. All the things he's done, all the people he's seen, all the famous people he's played with, to take the time and just always be good. I mean, that he's in that sense, I would say he's kind of stayed with me, had a deep impression. It's kind of stayed with me in my career. You know, I not to say that I've gotten to his levels, but it didn't matter. Like I was like, that's what I want to be regardless. So I felt like that was a good lesson to me to see him in action, you know?
Great. All right. Thank you both. So is there anything else you'd like to share about the festival or the Watson family that we haven't discussed?
So much. It's, I was just driving into the grounds and it was just the feeling became very powerful for me. Like almost an emotional feeling of just how many people have I met? How many, you know, stories have I heard here? How many memories? And it just comes washing over you, you know, and on so many different levels and the different paths and the different years, but there's one consistent thing that's always been there for us has been Merlefest, mm-hmm. and a place that we come back to because we live a very transient life. And that can be exciting, but it can be hard. And there's a way that sometimes you don't have the things, the memories don't latch onto things that it might typically be for somebody who stays in one place for a long time. But Merlefest, I realize in a very powerful sense, Merlefest has become that place for me. You know, where, I don't know, I just felt very grateful and thankful for it. And anywhere I walk, anywhere I go, and it's just a different memory is like pile onto a different memory. And it's almost like the closest thing you have to home as a traveling musician. I would say that in a real sense, I came through here, just this feeling of home. And I was very thankful because I think that's not a given. You know, you just don't necessarily have that as a traveling musician. And a lot of bands, I think I would say, if you come in here just for one day and you leave, you know, people love it, but like you don't get the sense to be feel like you're part of the Merlefest family. And I feel like we've been welcomed.
I feel that that's the main thing, is that we were welcomed, and we come from a very, being Ukrainian first generation immigrants, we had a very strong sense of culture and tradition, and our grandparents all lived with us till they died. And there was a certain cognizance of how magical this was and what an opportunity it was. So I am thankful that we did not waste that. Right away, we knew that this was something different. I mean, Lily Brewer, she donated the cabin stage. She, her daughter had us play her 95th birthday, I think, party. So we just Skyped in for that. And I got to know Lily, and she's a part of, from the very beginning of Merlefest. She changed her will, so she willed us a little songbook. And I'm like, where else does this happen? And
just one story.
That's just
many
one.
Different people you do meet and mm-hmm. become, whether it's a volunteer or a patron or somebody crew who's working the backstage, and you know, We're kind of become part of each other's stories. They ask me questions about, how is your sister doing? She hasn't been she played with the band. Where's she? You know, it's just like this really sense of you're among friends, you know? So, wow, what a special place that as a, you know, it's hard to find anchors in life when you're a traveling musician, but that's what Merlefest is.
That's what Doc created. I mean, it came from his spirit, and this is really amazing. It's almost an incarnation, and in that sense, even though he's moved on, it's really a testament to him. And in a sense, he does live on so, you know, it's in such a big way. And, you know, there's a few people that I just continually pray for in my life. And they tend to be a few founders of the festivals that really deeply impacted me. And I just feel that towards Doc. And I'm like, well, that's obvious that it's hit its mark in my heart. And obviously, was it music and memories? Mm-hmm. Music moments and memories mm-hmm. is the motto here.
Yeah.
And it's almost like, yeah, how many countless other people can say the same?
Sure. And tell me more about this songbook that you were willed.
It's just like, it was a spiral bound songbook. It was just, you know, just good old fashioned, hymns and American songs. It was nothing special as far as like, it wasn't like an archive and maybe these are some old cuts that you can, it was just a book that she loved. And because she loved it, she wanted us to have it before she passed. And I was so touched. I was like, I can't believe this. I mean, yeah, it was almost dumbfounded. Like, you would think of us like,
we meant, become part of people's stories. You know, you're not just playing music from a stage. You start getting woven into a fabric where like almost like the crowd, the volunteers, and the performers, they become part of a tapestry on its own. You know, the separation gets blurred with Merlefest between those, and then Merlefest becomes its own very special kind of tapestry that tells its own story. I think that's very unique to me. I love that. I love every year coming back now. For me, it is sort of catching up with old friends. You know, that's what it really is for us now.
Great. Thank you. So one more question about the book. Do y'all perform songs out of it ever? Or have you learned some of the songs out of the hymn book or songbook?
I don't think we've done that one, but I mean, definitely we've put some of Doc's stuff on our albums, you know, as tributes to Doc. For sure, because I mean, Doc was, you know, just it was our way. It's your own musical way of saying, tipping the hat, saying thank you. You know, so we've definitely put Doc's stuff on our albums.
And it's pretty fun. Is like when we do like we'll just do some, just regular old Doc songs. Like, you know, you get a line, I get a pole, honey. You know, we'll just every once in a while throw that in as an encore. And whenever we're in this part of the country, like it's just so fun. I like. Everybody just starts singing, and it's just like you're like, wow, like it's amazing
culture.
To see like
real culture happening. You know?
How what a present part of everyone's consciousness he was, and you know, I didn't grow up. I grew up in like near DC. It's a strong bluegrass area, but to see it like here, like this, it's literally this is a culture.
Yeah.
And yeah, I think definitely at some point it'd be cool just to see if we could put together a little album, in a tribute to Lily, you know, and. It's, I mean, if we just had more time, I think we're working on our third album in 1 year now, just all different takes. But I think that's kind of the one thing as we're touring a little bit less. We used to be on 180 days a year. Mm-hmm. Now it's like 90 shows, between, you know, 70 and 90 shows. Mm-hmm. We're actually getting into the studio more where we can do more concept albums and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. So definitely a great idea.
Great. All right.
Yeah.
Well, thank you all for your time. Let's see.